This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Program, and on the line with us, super pleased to have with us, Congressman Keith Ellison. He is the...
Brother Tom.
Congressman, it's great having you with us.
You bet, man.
Ellison.house.gov is your website. At Keith Ellison, of course, is the Twitter account. And you said you are happy to take phone calls. We'll get some of those for you in just a minute. And you're with us for the half hour, right?
Well, you know, I could probably hang out later than that. I know I have to probably around... I can go till about 1:40.
Oh, that's great. Okay, well, just let me know. We've got a hard break at the bottom of the hour from 1:28 until 1:33, where that is dedicated, you know, state local stations go to local news and advertisements and things. But other than that, we can work around pretty much anything. So what's on your mind? What's going on in Congress? What's going on in the Democratic Party that you want to tell people about?
Well, the first thing I want to mention, everybody, is that, look, with all of the horror around the hurricanes, Harvey, Irma, and the fires out west, and then the DACA fail and an attack that Trump just launched. Don't forget about Charlottesville. Don't forget about what he did to transgender soldiers, and don't forget about our pile. All these things are still there, and certainly don't forget about the Emoluments Clause violation. Don't forget that he's, you know, the nepotism. You know, all these things are still ongoing, and it has occurred to me, Tom, that the flood of scandal and attack and insult and outrage is just coming so furiously that people forget about the last horrible thing that he did. And so if he does anything slightly less horrible, then all of a sudden we're thinking, oh, he's getting better. He's not getting better. Everything he does is designed to promote a certain philosophy which says that poor people have too much, rich people have too little, that you have to be a certain racial, religious identity in order to be okay in his mind. And America only can accommodate certain people and not everyone. And he does not accept the idea of liberty and justice for all. So that's the thing on my mind first, that we should not let ourselves get stuck home by Trump simply because he has said he's willing to revisit DACA in 6 months. None of that. No, this is the same guy we've always seen, and we should add up his attacks and not forget about them. Mm-hmm. So that's that. DACA is certainly a top, a front center thing in my mind. And it strikes me too, Tom, that, you know, when you think about DACA, you know, 800,000 people, you know, here, these are people who grew up here. This is their country. They are Americans. They may not have the paperwork they need, but they are Americans in every way it means to be one. They contribute to our society, make it better every single day. And I just, you know, think that it's important for us to consider what it means to be an undocumented person in the United States. First of all, nobody comes to be in the United States just because, like, why not? You know, come leave your home, your family, your language, your culture to come up here to be what? Discriminated against? No, people do it because in my opinion, our U.S. policies around trade and other things to contribute to people's need to leave. Employers up here want to attract undocumented labor so that they can pay them less and they can have fewer rights. When you think about the undocumented people, these are folks who pay into Social Security, but they don't get it. They pay if they pay rent, they pay property taxes, but they often are excluded from many of the public service benefits that go along with it. I mean, these folks, and then they have to live in fear. And so I think it's important to understand that, you know, an undocumented worker is probably a highly exploited worker. And so it is in the interest of all working people to give everyone a status. That way we can make sure that there's real justice for everybody. And that's kind of, you ask me what's in my brain?
Yeah.
There's a lot more, but that's enough for now.
That's pretty solid stuff. One other thing before we pick up phone calls, I heard that you have a podcast. Like, everybody's doing it. We started a podcast a couple of weeks ago. We call it the Hartman Report. It's kind of best of this show. It's free. It's over on iTunes. Tell me about your podcast.
Well, my podcast is called We the Podcast. We the Podcast. We've been going for like 2 years now. And the reason that we did it, Tom, is because I looked on regular network news, and you don't find economic news about regular people. When you ever find a TV broadcast show talking about, in the mainstream, talking about payday lending, talking about the diaper need, talking about the need to increase the minimum wage to $15, or talking about, you know, even franchisees and how they often get mistreated by the franchisor, and talking about monopoly and how market concentration is really hurting this economy. So basically, We the Podcast is all about how people outside the billionaire class experience this economy.
That is.
And you can go on iTunes and check us out, We the Podcast.
That's great. And that's, you know, you're a young whippersnapper here, but I'm an old fart. And I remember, and maybe you're old enough to remember, I don't know, but I growing up in Lansing, Michigan, there were two statewide newspapers in Michigan, the Detroit Free Press and the Detroit News. And one, and I forget which was which, but one was the labor paper and the other was the business paper. One had a business section, the other had a labor section. And, you know, my dad worked in a tool and die shop, was very active with the union. We'd get the paper that had the labor section. And literally every day, there was 5, 6, 8 pages of labor news. I think it's been basically since the 80s, since the Reagan era, that the newspapers have dumped all these labor pages, probably because they destroyed all the unions. But I think it's just super that you're filling that need, as it were, with a podcast.
Well, yeah, and so we like to talk about, you know, the Nissan strike, the organizing drive here. We want people to know that, you know, people, you know, it's kind of a old saw now that, oh, the labor movement is shrinking. No, you know, let me tell you, man, there's a lot of fight in the labor movement, man. They're swinging every day. And so, you know, we talk about what's going on. We had Lee Saunders on of the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees on. That's the podcast. It's the most recent one. And we, you know, we talked about a lot of things. We talked about how it was AFSCME that stood behind the sanitation workers in 1968 when Martin Luther King marching with them was shot down and killed.
Yep.
But it was AFSCME. And I think a lot of people need to remember that, you know, when Martin Luther King gave his great speech, the I Have a Dream speech, it was the UAW and other unions that helped bankroll that march. And it was unions that were there when we lost him. But, you know, they won the strike anyway. And, you know, Martin Luther King was prophetic on the importance of labor and unions and the dignity of work.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're gonna hit a real brief break here, and we'll be back in just a second with Keith Ellison taking calls from our listeners. Congressman Keith Ellison, the deputy chair of the DNC, brilliantly representing the 5th District of Minnesota. His website, ellison.house.gov. You can tweet him at Keith Ellison, just like it sounds, KEITHELLISON. And we'll be right back with more of Congressman Keith Ellison.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Your calls for Congressman Keith Ellison coming up. And welcome back. Congressman, you're still with us, right?
Right here.
Yeah, okay, great. Omar, watching us on Free Speech TV in Herndon, Virginia. Omar, you are on the air with Congressman Ellison.
Hey, Omar.
Hello, Congressman Ellison, and thank you for taking my call out, Tom Hartman, and sure. Eid Mubarak to you, late Eid Mubarak.
Eid Mubarak, Juma Mubarak, Salaam Alaikum.
I just wanted to know, Mr. Ellison, what are we doing right now to take back, what's our strategy to take back the House, the Senate, and the White House? And also I want to know about what is the DNC doing to deal with this voter oppression, like the caging in Ohio, that if you don't vote for 2 years, they're going to write you off. And this voter oppression throughout the country, what are we doing to tackle that?
Let me tell you what we're doing. We are doing what I would call radical presence. We are becoming present and engaged in every single zip code in the United States. This look, what we had a program called Resistance Summer this summer. where we literally knocked on thousands and thousands of doors all over the country. The DNC gave every state party extra money for one purpose, canvassing, door-to-door canvassing, not television, not mail, direct voter engagement. We actually were present and helped folks win in Iowa, New Hampshire, Oklahoma, and statewide seats. Now, we're going to continue that program. It's going to morph into the fall. It's called Rise and Organize, but it's canvassing. We have not been doing off-year canvassing. This is new. And we're going in strong in Virginia, but we're not forgetting about every other zip code in America. Our idea is that, you know, people view elections properly. They view them as a means to a better community. But us politicians have viewed election as the be-all and the end-all. If we will engage people all the time around building stronger community, then the election becomes a no-brainer, because it's like, hey, the election is going to help us build a stronger community. Because we've acted like the election is the end, people treat it in a very transactional way and don't really see the whole point, because it's not clear to them how this improves their lives in their community. So that is what we're doing. And so, you know, we've had people on the ground in Michigan and Mississippi. We've had them all over the country. And so that's what we're doing now. I don't know if you feel it yet, but we want you to do that. So check us out. We have a weekly program called Democrats Live. It's a live weekly It's a weekly Facebook Live live stream, and we're pushing out information about it all of the time. Now, when it comes to voter protection, we know that the stock and trade of the Republicans is suppressing the vote. There's more of us than there are of them. So what are they going to do? They're going to suppress us. Well, we're fighting back. We're suing. We're challenging. Everywhere we have a voter protection program, and we've been active and on the ground, and we're using litigation, and we're using preparation and advance action. Now, I'm not going to tell you we're where we need to be. We are sure not, man. We got a whole lot more work to do, but I think that we have a clear direction and plan, and we've made some substantial steps certainly since May, June to really reorganize the Democratic Party into a grassroots-oriented party from what was, in my opinion, a battleground state party.
Yeah. That is absolutely great. And this thing of vote theft, I don't call it voter suppression, or I do, but...
Yeah, vote theft.
I
like your word better.
Yeah, because it is. It is vote theft. They're stealing our votes from us, damn it. And, we should have a right to that. Congressman Keith Ellison, taking your calls. We'll be back in just a second with more of your calls to Congressman Ellison. Congressman Keith Ellison taking your calls here on the Tom Hartman program. And let's see here. Jack in Sacramento, California. You're on the air with Congressman Ellison.
Yes. So, hello.
Hey, Jack.
Yeah. Hi, Congressman Ellison. I worked for Bernie there for a couple of years and was very disappointed with the election. I'm looking at John Nichols' article in The Nation, where it talks about the Democratic Party's lurch to the center, not going after rural districts. I appreciate your energy. I'm a strong supporter of you. We're not getting it. We're not getting this force. And frankly, this theme, a better deal, is just way too weak. I'm not sure what it should be. It's complicated to get the right message. But we've got to stop going for the center and triangulation. I even understand we're not supporting free choice and abortion anymore. Are we moving to the center? Are we trying to triangulate and have a milquetoast campaign? I don't feel the aggressiveness.
The answer is no, we're not doing that. That is not what we're doing. But let me just tell you this. The easiest thing to do, and also the most dangerous thing to do is to be cynical, right? We're not giving up. It is an absurd idea that we are backing off our commitment to a woman's right to choose. We absolutely are there. We've been there. And anybody who says that we're not doing that, show me the evidence as to where we've said we were not going to do that. It's just not the case. And I want to assure everybody who's worried about it that we are as for women's rights as we ever have been, if not more. That's where the party is. It's in our platform. That's where it's at. So there's that. we're not going toward the center. In fact, I think that it's clear that every time I go to a rally and I mention the importance of Medicare for all or single payer, that's the applause line. That's what people want. That's where people are going. Elizabeth Warren just signed Bernie's bill. I've been on Bernie's bill for years. And, you know, that's where it's at. So I don't see that the Democratic Party is going toward the center. Now, let me just say this. All parties are coalitions. And all coalitions that come together have different things that they want. So it is true that today the Democratic Party is your progressive, activist like yourself, like myself, like Tom, but there are also people who are a little bit more centrist. They are in our party. They're there. The question is, will we be energetic enough to move the party in the direction we want it to go in? If we check out, for sure the centrist will win. If we engage, well, then maybe they're going to have to see it our way. But my thing is, the moment now calls for engagement. It calls for you to be involved. Now, you said something about you don't like the better deal. Let me tell you, the better deal is a document written to satisfy a broad coalition of people. But the better deal does work for progressives because it calls for what? Increase in minimum wage, increase in overtime pay. It calls for increase in pay and for people. It calls for cutting costs. What costs? Medical treatments, the cost of health care, the cost of college, the cost of rents. But then it talks about how to fight the rigging of the economy, and we deal with monopoly, and we deal with market concentration, and we deal with the money in politics. So there is plenty enough to work with. Let me tell you, there has never been a collection of words arranged in any arrangement that you want that are going to magically get everybody on board and inspire everybody. It's never happened, and it never will. We've got to understand what is messaging. Messaging has to do with the messenger, how that message is delivered. Then it has to do with the words that we say, and then it has to do with doing what we said we were going to do. The days when the Democratic Party can say we're for the working people, but then support trade deals that hurt working people must absolutely come to an end. The days when the Democratic Party says we're for low-cost, unaffordable drugs, and then we don't fight for those things, that has to come to an end. Now, how does it come to an end? People like you demand it. You get up on Tom Hartman's show and you say we're not putting up with this. You write letters, and you make Democrats be Democrats. Now, that's how we're going to win. But to just say, oh, it's not what I want, so I'm not sure I'm enthusiastic, man, let me tell you where you get your enthusiasm from. When you think about 32 million people having their health care stripped away, if the Republicans were to repeal the Affordable Care Act, that ought to motivate you. When you think about 800,000 kids who are Americans in every way being kicked out of the country by Trump, hopefully that gets you fired up. When you think about the president hugging and acting soft on the KKK, that ought to get you animated. So that's all I got to say, man. Thank you for the call, but I need you to be an activist, and I just want to say this to you. It's so easy to be a critic, but it's hard to actually organize people and make it work. You know, and I know a lot of, I'm not saying this is you, but I know a lot of progressives who would rather intellectualize about message than to get out and knock a door. That's what we need. Go knock a door. Go knock a door. Go call somebody, recruit them to be involved in this movement. That is what I believe we really need.
Yeah, we just have 40 seconds to let break at the bottom of the hour I was telling you about. My big thing is telling people, join your local Democratic Party. Try to become a precinct committee person.
Yes, yes, yes. Absolutely, yes.
I mean, you know, stop complaining and become part of the solution, damn it. It's a very straightforward process. So people can find their local Democratic parties, what, by Googling them, by looking in the phone book?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Heck yeah. You call up the DNC and say, where's my local party? And let me tell you, man, local parties are jacked, man. They're excited all over the country.
Yeah.
I'll tell you about it when we come back.
It's great. You can stick around for a little bit longer.
Yeah, I'm going to hang out with you.
Super. Okay, we got about a five-minute break here. Congressman Keith Ellison with us, taking your calls. We'll be back with more of Congressman Ellison and your calls, your thoughts, and you know my thoughts and the news of the day. Stay.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
And you can tweet Congressman Ellison at Keith Ellison, his website, ellison.house.gov. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Congressman Keith Ellison on the line with us. Congressman, you still here?
I'm with you, man.
Great.
I appreciated you sharing with us that there's more than one way to run an economy.
Yeah, well, thank you.
The only way.
Oh yeah, that we play that over our stream. You know, that people can hear. A lot of people who are listening to our regular radio stations and things don't hear that book report. But that was from a book I wrote called "Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight." So ready to pick up some phone calls, and you've got another 5-10 minutes with us.
Yep.
Okay, cool. Just let me know when you got a bail, okay?
Yeah.
Let's see here, Tim in Bakersfield, California. Hey, Tim, what's on your mind? You're on with Congressman Ellison.
Doing, Congressman Ellison, how are you doing, sir?
Great.
Hey, I just had a question. I'm a fourth generation farmer here in the Central Valley, California.
Awesome. Thank you for feeding us. We appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Well, we've kind of got ran out. We were a small mom and pop, so we went bankrupt in '98. So, but anyway, I dealt with the DACA program. I've got a lot of the, you know, as a kid, we used to have coyotes bring family members over and work for us. And I have brothers and sisters who came over as illegals who worked their way through the system and got their paperwork and are legal now. They're family members. Those are the people who fought for our land with us, you know, who worked right beside us. It was really a family mentality. And that's what most farm families are. And that's how we see most of the workers coming over. But I also saw in these cities, the corruption that takes place because of the open border and the isolation that a lot of these immigrants are put in by their own people who are held in third world conditions in a first world nation in our country, which isn't acceptable. So somehow, Congressman, I would like that you guys work together to get them out of the shadows. As DACA goes, I'm a Republican. Those kids belong here. They have no other home except here. And you guys need to work together to get them legal and get them done. And I will promise you, if Trump tries to push them out, I will fight with you to keep them here because there is no other place for them. The proper
place. You got my commitment. You got my commitment to help them get a status.
Yeah. Tim, thank you. So you were saying, Congressman.
I think I commend him for calling, and I thank him for his observation. You know, I don't really refer to any human being as an illegal, but I understand what he's trying to say, and so you know, I think he's right. You know, Trump precipitated this. I mean, you know, and by the way, you know, we've been trying to push for comprehensive immigration reform for years. John Boehner just would never give us a vote. And when Tim Ryan got the job, you know, he promised he wouldn't bring up a vote on an immigration bill. So we'll see if he's going to keep that. I hope he doesn't. That's a promise not worth keeping. But, I mean, I think it's right. I mean, you know, and I'll also say this. In the United States, we cannot keep subsidizing commodities like corn and others, dumping them into Mexico, and then saying, and then running smallholders out of business, and then mad when they come north to work. I mean, people don't want to look. Why would anybody leave their family, leave their culture, leave their loved ones, leave, you know, to come north to get discriminated against? They do it because of necessity, and in part, they do it because of our policy. You know, wages have dropped in Mexico 9% since NAFTA. NAFTA's no picnic for the Mexican people. It might make Carlos Slim a lot of money, but, you know, it doesn't make the average person. So what's my point? We need a comprehensive immigration bill. I'm for it. I'm glad to have some Republicans who believe that. I'm glad to have some Republicans who want to stand with us on DACA.
let's get a vote. Let's vote this. Let's get this thing over. Let's get this thing done right away. I'm ready to vote now.
Okay. Kurt in Los Angeles, you're on the air with Congressman Ellison.
Hey, Mr. Ellison, Congressman Ellison, it is an honor to speak with you, and thank you, Tom, for taking my call so quickly. I live in L.A. County.
Hey,
it is so fortunate that I just got on after this guy just got off the radio. I live in L.A. County, but the way they got these things gerrymandered, Kevin McCarthy's district reaches into L.A. County all the way from Bakersfield.
Right.
And he has ran virtually unopposed since almost 2006.
Unacceptable.
And I would like to run against him. He is my congressman.
Good.
And I have had the FEC website bookmarked and on my webpage, on my browser for over 2 weeks, trying to figure out some of this paperwork. And if I can just get you to respond to some of the emails and tweets that I've sent you to kind of help me get a campaign manager or somebody who can point me in the right direction, I promise you I would not disappoint you or any other person in the Democratic committee, because
let me say this. I'm not aware of any reach outs you've made to me, because if you reached out to me, I'd reach back. But just DM me on Twitter, man. You know, I'm at Keith Ellison, and I'll plug you into the right folks, man. There's a way of doing this. Kevin McCarthy needs to be confronted on the issues, debated. And I think it would be better if he was in the private sector for everybody. And so I'm very encouraged by you running. In fact, if anybody listening to the sound of my voice, I want you to think about running for office, for real, if you're for the people. And so let's get it done, man. DM me, man. I'd love to talk to you about next steps.
Okay. Jordy in Seattle, you're on the air with Congressman Ellison.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've seen a call to be in the streets on November 4th, and I've seen signs from this group, refusefascism.org, lately, calling for people to be in the streets and continue to be in the streets until the Trump-Pence regime are removed. Do you think that we have a good shot at impeachment, and how much good will it do when there are more Republicans lined up behind them?
I think exercising your First Amendment right to disagree with your government and to redress grievances is always a good idea. So there's that. Do I think that, I don't know if we can impeach him. I put it like this. If we don't try, we won't be able to do it. It's like one of those things where I can't guarantee you we're going to win, but I can tell you that if we don't play the game, we will for sure lose. That's what I got for you, man. I mean, I'm just not the kind of person to, you know, gas you up and tell you a bunch of things you want to hear. I don't know if we can get him impeached, but guess what? He ought to be impeached. He deserves to be. And I think that we need to support the Mueller investigation. As a matter of fact, Republicans like Congressman DeSantis in Florida are already trying to push bills to limit the investigation. What are they afraid of? He's already threatening and publicly trying to undermine the investigation of him. He already fired Comey. So my thing is, let's keep the pressure on.
Yeah, amen. We have just 3 minutes to a break at 45, Congressman. Jennifer in Las Cruces, New Mexico. You're on the air with Congressman Ellison.
Hello, and thank you very much for taking my call. I was trying to embrace free solutions that initiatives that are out there right now. And I was just wondering if you embrace these ideas as well. One of them is the national popular vote, which would circumvent the need for the Electoral College.
I agree.
It wouldn't circumvent it altogether, but it is it would give us a popular vote to select the president. And then the next one would be the ranked choice voting, which could be used as part of a national strategy. And
we're doing ranked choice voting in Minneapolis right now, so I do have experience with it. And I think we're still working the kinks out. It's been positive. It's had some negatives, too. But I think we still got to keep working that over. For those who don't know, you just rank your choices, and you can skip the whole primary. You don't even need a primary. It's like automatic runoff. What's the third one, ma'am?
Oh, her third one was full representation. She's dropped off the line now. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I'm not sure exactly what she meant by that.
Yeah, but the first two I am aware of, I'm fully supportive of the first. With the second one, I think it works well at the local level. You know, we can continue to talk about it. So, hey, Tom, unfortunately, I got to hit the door, man, but thank you so much for having me on.
My
and
pleasure.
I'll see you next Friday.
Congressman Ellison, thank you so much for being with us. Great talking
to you.
I truly appreciate it. Thank you, sir. Let's see here. Armand in Litchfield Park, Arizona. Hey, Armand, we got a minute to the break. What's up?
Hi. I had a quick question, hypothetical. If hurricanes hit Washington, D.C., do you think Republicans would change their mind about climate change?
Oh, the answer is no, because they're still getting their money from the fossil fuel industry.
It was a long shot, but...
I mean, these are the same Republicans. Keep in mind, Armand, these are the same Republicans who 40 years ago were dropping dead of cancer left and right, and yet Mike Pence in 2000 wrote an op-ed claiming that cancer is not caused by cigarettes.
I know. It's amazing how the revolving door can really corrupt these guys. It's for every $1 invested, about $200 or so gets returned back to the investors. I mean, it's a pretty hefty price to give up.
No, the best investment you can make in America right now is to buy your own congressman if you are a big business. You've got to be big enough to do it. You got to be basically a billion-dollar company or a multi-hundred-million-dollar company. But if you are, and you've got that, then, you know, you're the best way to make money in the United States is to buy a member of Congress. And that is a bad thing. Armand, thank you for the call. It's a terrible thing, in fact, because what it means is that we're not a democracy any longer. We're an oligarchy. And the oligarchs own the legislative apparatus, essentially, for lack of a better phrase. So, anyhow, we'll continue with this. We'll be taking your calls. I'm sorry, Congressman Ellison is gone.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We're also going to check in with Talk Media News, too. Hartman. And welcome back. Alan in Seattle. Hey, Alan, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, hey, good morning, Tom.
Hey.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about the Russia investigation and how it was that they could so easily, fool, the American public. And I have to say that they were shown the way into the darkness via Fox News, who, you know, is statistically proven that their listeners are more uninformed than anybody else. So without Fox News leading the way and showing how gullible the American public is, I think the Russians would have had a little more difficult time. Not that they wouldn't have accomplished what they wanted to, but it was clear, you know, that that's what he said.
Well, it didn't hurt that Donald Trump had $2 billion worth of free TV time. I mean, it didn't hurt at all.
Yeah, the media anointed him and dissed pretty much every other candidate who was worthwhile. So, you know, if Fox News is outlawed in Canada, and I think they just lost their rights in England because they do not tell the truth.
Yeah, although they didn't lose their rights. What happened is in the UK, Rupert Murdoch is trying to buy Sky News. He's trying to buy a satellite TV network. And the last time he tried to buy it, his company got busted for wiretapping the prime minister or something like that. I mean, it was pretty... or members of the royal family, I guess it was. It was a huge scandal. Remember a couple of years back, and the woman, mm-hmm. Rebecca, the redhead, who was somehow involved with Murdoch and the companies and all this stuff, and she was running one of his newspapers there in the UK. And so they were not able to buy Sky News because they couldn't prove that they were a good citizen. This time, they just dumped Fox News in the UK, I think by way of saying, you know, we're trying to wash that stink off us so that we can qualify to buy Sky News. We'll see. You know, and I don't know that it's just that simple, but I think that's a piece of it. Anyhow, thanks for the call, Alan. Jimmy in Littleton, Colorado. Hey, Jimmy, you got a minute and a half. What's up?
Yeah, the fast diet again. Had a friend of mine I bugged for 4 years. He's 83 now.
Mm-hmm.
And he wouldn't do it. Thought it was dumb and all that. I don't know what made him change his mind, but in December, and he wasn't telling me, he started skipping breakfast. Mm. And on Sundays, he only ate one meal. Mm. and he didn't eat after dinner. He only ate lunch and dinner and then nothing after, something close to the 8-hour
right.
fast diet.
Right.
78 pounds he lost from December to now.
Yeah, that's what happens when you periodically fast.
Yeah, he only skipped basically just breakfast and, well, Sunday one meal. He would eat brunch
yeah.
at the nursing home, but he's been in the nursing home for 3 years. And every time he came over to check on his house, he was in the car. And I couldn't believe he was saying, oh, I lost this much weight, you know. It's like, what?
Yeah.
You look fat.
So you're still on this diet. This is the diet where you eat fewer than 600 calories a day for 3 days a week, right, Jimmy?
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, I'm 55 pounds lighter than my worst weight. But
it's not just losing weight. It's getting healthy, isn't it?
Yeah, your stem cells activate while you're fasting.
Yes.
Chemicals release in your body to do repair work when you're fasting, not while you're eating. You grow brain cells when you're fasting, not while you're eating.
Yeah, your body puts itself back together. Jimmy, I got to run, but thank you for the call. Spot on. And you can keep us up to date on how things are going. We'll be back with more of your calls. We're going to actually check in with Patrick Gavin. Talk to you. Same way. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and Loving What You Do, Ellen Ratner's new book. On the line with us, Patrick Gavin with Talk Media News. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. So what's going on in the world today that we need to know about?
Well, I have to admit, I do want to hear more about that previous caller's intermittent fasting, because that's a topic that I'm totally fascinated with. But that's not what I'm here for.
Okay.
So the big news this week is obviously Trump having somewhat of a political victory, at least by working on this deal with Democrats to put off to raise the debt ceiling for at least the next 3 months. Substantively, it's not the biggest deal in the world. I mean, we're just going to have this battle in a couple of months. But I think it's been interesting to sort of watch exactly Trump's reaction to this. I mean, Trump is, by all accounts, from the reporting out of the White House, downright giddy, not only at having pulled off a deal, but even more importantly, just the kind of press attention he's gotten from this. I mean, this was a day after Peter Baker, a great reporter for The New York Times, wrote this whole story, kind of welcoming the week back to Congress and noting how, you know, this is a real test of whether or not Trump can score a deal. And then, you know, 36 hours later, he, in fact, is able to score a deal. But it does really drive home this idea that this is kind of a presidency by cable news, that Trump sort of lives and dies by that, judges his successes and failures by that. So that was sort of an interesting observation this week, was to sort of see sort of how Trump reacts when he's actually able to get something done. Onto the more substantive part of this, you know, I think that, in fact, the deal that he struck may in the long term actually end up hurting him in a lot of ways. I mean, first of all, he's House Republicans, Senate Republicans, certainly Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell are, while perhaps not terribly surprised by Trump's move, are furious at him, and so are their staffs as well, at this idea that, you know, that he totally went around them and scored this deal with some Democratic leaders. And more selfishly, from their perspective, you know, all this really means, I think, for them is that they're just going to have to deal with this issue again about the debt ceiling, but that much closer to the midterms, in which all these guys would like to, you know, focus on other issues besides that, and also be able to tell their voters that they have this great relationship with the president, but in fact, it's very clear that he's not. In a lot of ways, this was kind of Trump sticking his middle finger to certainly Mitch McConnell, with whom Trump's pretty upset with over the healthcare debacle. Certainly a little bit Paul Ryan as well. But I think the other side of that coin is that, although it is getting a lot of, I think, positive press in the press, I think this idea that, you know, this is going to welcome in this harmonious period of bipartisanship between Democrats and President Trump will probably live to be short term, even though Trump is sort of, I think, basking in this week's attention of him being a bipartisan leader.
Yeah, this is not Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan.
No, for sure. I mean, this is definitely a short term phenomenon. You know, I think one interesting quote I saw I believe it was in Axios this morning, was this idea that Democrats got more done in a single Oval Office visit in one afternoon than congressional Republicans have achieved all year. And I think that if you're a congressional Republican, that's a real
it's an indictment.
It absolutely is an indictment. I think that, in terms of what this can mean going forward, I do think this is going to, while this eases the fiscal situation in front of Congress right now, in a lot of ways, I think it's going to hurt tax reform, which, again, depending on folks' position, could be a good or bad thing. But, Trump needs Republicans more than Democrats, obviously, and he can't afford to lose that much more of them. But, the trust between Trump and the folks on the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue in his own party is fractured, and it's bad. And Trump will need every single Republican vote for tax reform to get this done. And I think that Republicans will have less to show their voters next midterm because of this as well. I think the fact they have 40 legislative days until this sort of stopgap deal expires. In that time, they have to renew government funding. They have to increase the debt limit again. They say that in the same period of time, in the 45 days until 2017 comes to an end, legislative days, they somehow want to get tax reform passed. Even though we have yet to see a bill, it's being written behind closed doors, sort of reminiscent of how healthcare went about as well. So, this is an interesting week for political observers, just to see sort of how this Trump White House operates, and also to see how this Republican Party in so many ways is really kind of falling apart at the seams, it seems.
Yeah, it does seem that way. Although, never count, never say never in politics. What else is going on in the world, Patrick?
Well, the other big news is sort of the reports we're hearing coming out of Donald Trump Jr.'s private hearing with Senate investigators yesterday, when that largely focused on, it took about 5 hours, largely focused on that June 2016 meeting between Trump Jr. And a Russian lawyer with the folks on the Senate. But the Senate investigators really trying to figure out not only what happened, but trying to get Trump to explain, well, why is it that your story switched so often? What's interesting about what we learned from Trump's testimony yesterday is I think we're beginning to get a preview of how the Trump world is going to explain this, which is what Trump Jr. essentially argued yesterday in explaining his various flip-flops on exactly recounting what happened. His argument is essentially going to come down to, look, we're completely inexperienced. We're not Washington insiders. We're not lawyers. I mean, even though they're surrounded by lawyers, we are outside the Beltway folk. And so accordingly, we were essentially too dumb to be able to pull off this incredibly nefarious, complicated global scheme.
So this is a variation on the old, I'm sorry, officer, I didn't know I couldn't put that candy bar in my pocket and walk out of the store with it.
That's right. Ignorance of the law is no excuse, but they're going for that.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see if it works. It hasn't in the past, but I think you're absolutely right. Patrick Gavin with Talk Media News. Thank you, Patrick, for the news report.
You bet. Take care.
Good talking with you. We'll be back with more of the news of the day. Boy, is there a pile of it. And your call. And if anything goes Friday, too. Right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.